युजली प्रोजिंग कडे असतात, बऱ्याच लोक मारतात प्रोजिंग कडनं रेकॉर्ड.
That's my selfish purpose. I don't know you then. Okay, can't translate it only. My God.
It's so powerful.
ज्ञानशिलाकारोन्मिलितं तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टम् स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपा कदा मह्यं दातित्वा पदान्तिकम् वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरौ श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साकृजातं सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सारभूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च मा ॐ विष्णुपादाय कृष्णपृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामी इति नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे नमो महावदन्याय कृष्णप्रेम प्रदायते कृष्णाय कृष्णचैतन्य नाम्ने गौरतुषे नमः. हे कृष्णा करुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिकाकान्त राधाकान्त नमोस्तुते तप्तकाञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. प्रपन्न पारिजाताय स्तोत्रवेत्रैकपाणये ज्ञानमुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृतदुहे नमः. Hare Krishna. Today we start with we continue with the 13th chapter, where we'll be discussing the most Upanishadic section of the Bhagavad Gita, where actually Lord Krishna explains the relationship between the tapatraya, jiva, ishvara and prakriti. So we concluded the 12th chapter yesterday with Krishna telling how the devotee who worships the path of bhakti, yetu dharmamritamitam yathoktam paryupasate, he is ativa me priya, he is most dear to me. And now Now the Vedic culture can be represented as a sort of three-story structure. If you have in one sense, it's similar to yoga ladder, but it's just a different analogy to explain this to understand it. The three-story building.
So this is the level of dharma.
So dharma is mundane, material. It is important for sustaining the worldly order. So everybody, when they follow their particular order, they make spiritual advancement and they maintain material progress and harmony by that. So Brahmana, when he studies and teaches scriptures, you know, he gets the dakshina by which he earns his living, and he also ensures the spiritual culture and knowledge within society. So this is the level of dharma. And so basically Krishna talks about ascending from one level to another in the Bhagavad Gita. So initially the whole process of karma kand as well as karma yoga falls in this category.
So at the bottom of this we have vikarma, which is not even dharma, adharma it is. But then here you have karma kand, then you have sakam karma yoga, then you have nishkam karma yoga.
So in this, one is gradually ascending from attachment to the world to up and up. So in the level of moksha, one is basically trying for two things. One is trying to struggle to disconnect oneself from this material world and to fix oneself on the spiritual reality. So this is the stage of a struggle of a sadhaka. A sadhaka may be bhakta, he may be a yogi, he may be a jnani, whatever it is. So all of them are struggling. But this stage is more of a stage where one is strongly trying to detach oneself from the material world. One is not trying to enjoy this world, but one is trying to go beyond the world to Brahman. And this, so in this stage, at the highest level, when one comes to prema, one is actually situated in love. So when one is, this is a pure devotee. Because he is situated in love. So Nishkam Karma Yoga is also sadhaka, but not fully sadhaka, because what he is seeking may not be very clear. So at that stage. So now the Bhagavad Gita in one sense has talked about this.
Now there is a parallel to this. There is sort of staircase. Or a ladder. Now if a person, wherever he is,
so whatever he is, he is trying to rise up. So the ladder is a ladder of personal transformation. Transformation means that actually what determines where one is on this ladder is one's own individual consciousness. How much one is attached to matter or attached to the Lord. So now this is basically Krishna is showing Arjuna a ladder over here by which he can gradually advance upwards. So many times the Bhagavad Gita is often thought of by people as containing contradictory directives. One place it is saying one thing, another place it is saying another thing. But actually it says different things because different people are at different levels. And one man's food is another man's poison. So, like that, for a sannyasi to renounce, for a person who is a jnani to renounce the world is good. But for a person who is at this level, who has this adhikar, to be a householder, for him to renounce the world is bad. So therefore, you know, what is good and bad is always related to where a person is. And that's why the Bhagavad Gita often seems to say contradictory things, because the Bhagavad Gita is talking to sadhakas, to people at a different levels. So when it is talking, that's why, you know, there is one society of Smartha Brahmanas, they don't chant this word Sarva Dharman Pratyajya Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja. Whenever they recite, they make it Sarva Dharman Pratyajya Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja. They change the words. Because they say, how can you abandon dharma? Krishna has come to establish dharma. It's a mistake in the word basically. So they recited sarva adharma and prithiji mamekam sharanam vraja. So they just can't comprehend if Krishna has come dharma samsthapanartaya, how can he tell somebody to abandon dharma? So basically, in the Bhagavad Gita, to understand it, we have to change our conceptions, not change the Bhagavad Gita. But unfortunately, they do like that. So the Bhagavad Gita is going to speak at different levels to different people. So now Krishna has more or less traced the way up. So you know, Krishna talks about, as we know, there is a staircase and there is an elevator. The staircase is a step-by-step yoga ladder by which one advances. So that staircase, so now this is not exactly the same as the three divisions of the Bhagavad Gita, the six chapters. It's not like that because the first six chapters are Karma Yoga to Bhakti Yoga, second chapter, six chapters are Bhakti Yoga, and third six chapters are Jnana Yoga to Bhakti Yoga. So this is not exactly corresponding to it. If you want to correspond, it's more like this is the first six chapters, this is the middle six chapters, and this is the next six chapters. But I'll try it again to explain the flow in a separate diagram, how the six chapters are connected. But essentially, what Lord Krishna is doing is that he, in the first six chapters, shows how gradually, step by step, by Karma Kan, by Karma Yoga, then Ashtanga Yoga, one can come to the perfection of Bhakti. Then he says, so this is the ladder. Then from the seventh chapter, he introduces the elevator. What is the elevator? Just surrender unto me. You know, Jatrudhavajantema, Jana Sukrutu no Arjuna. So actually, who are the Sukruti? You know, Artho Jigyasu Artharthi. If you say Artharthi, he would fall at the level of Karma Kand, basically. He just wants some money. You know, Artho would more or less fall at that level. But Krishna says, all of them will also become Mahatmas. So basically he is offering in this that middle six chapters an elevator. And we see Krishna asked that question. Arjuna asked that question to Krishna. Keshu keshu cha bhaveshu. How can people know you in the material world? Why, if somebody is already purified, you won't have to ask that. They don't need to ask that question. So Krishna is talking about how to help even people who are materially minded, materially conscious, to ascend that elevator and rise up. So essentially, there is a step-by-step ladder by which one rises from Sakam Karma Yoga, Karma Kand to Sakam Karma Yoga, to Nishkam Karma Yoga, then to Ashtanga Yoga and to Bhakti Yoga. And then he says, from wherever you are, you can just rise by Bhakti. And in fact, we see this, Krishna is saying, Apiche Sudaracharo and Yepisyu Papa Yonaya. So he is showing how much Bhakti can go down to lift a person. That is the glory of Bhakti. Now, after talking about this progression upwards through the elevator, so Krishna has shown now, is this ladder and this staircase clear?
Yeah.
So this is the levels of, these are basically three levels of reality. Now there is the materialistic reality, then there is the struggle where a person considers the world to be false and he considers Brahman to be real. But then beyond that is the level where one understands that in Brahman there is a higher reality where there is action. So we can correlate this with more with material action, this is inaction, and this is spiritual action. So these are the three levels of reality which are more or less there, because the material world is also real, Brahman is also real, and the spiritual world is, or the social planets are also here. So now Krishna will talk about the example that the Bhagavad Gita is more like a sandwich. The sandwich, the essence, is what is in the middle. So like that, the essential message of the Bhagavad Gita, Bhakti, is right in the middle. So now,
I'll separate those two levels. So this is the first floor, or the ground floor. This is the level of material action. This is the level of inaction. And then, this is the level of devotional action. So in one sense, chapters 1 to 6 have shown how one can rise like this.
So from this level, how one can rise here, Krishna has shown in chapters 1 to 6.
And this level itself, how this can also extend fully down, it has been shown in chapters 7 to 12.
What is
it? That this is pure bhakti. The pure bhakti means
somebody can be at the most low level, but from there also he can rise
all the way up. So that means in this level, this shows how you can rise up to here, from here, and then now
here, what Krishna will show, chapter 13 to 18, how one can rise from the level of jnana to the level of bhakti.
So basically what I have done is, I just separated the three floors, instead of putting them in one sequence, so this is at a lower level. In the first six chapters, Krishna has shown how one can rise from material action to spiritual action. Now in this chapter, Krishna will tell how one can arise from inactive contemplation to spiritual action. 7 to 12 shows, wherever you are, if you just embrace bhakti, from wherever you are, you can rise to the topmost level. That's why this is shown right from your bottom to the top.
So, essence of
this hierarchy will come in 18.54 and 55. Now when actually Krishna talks about this,
it's not just here. Basically, like this. Just, Krishna also talks about how one makes progress in jnana and ultimately culminates in bhakti. So this is especially typified in 1854 and 55.
1854 is Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma Na Shochati Na Kangshati Samah Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. So, now this verse is in one sense describing the Brahman level. Brahma Bhuta and Prasanna Na Shochati Na Kangshati Samah Sarveshu Bhuteshu. There are two dualities in this world. We hanker for things and we hanker for people. So he's saying it's equipoised among both. And this verse is like a death knell for Mayavad. Why? Because according to them, once you attain Brahman platform, bhakti ends. But Krishna is saying when you come to bhakti, Brahman platform, bhakti will begin. So it is the antithesis of the whole teaching of Mayavad. But what Krishna is telling over here is, when you come, we come to this level, then our pure devotional service will begin. Para bhakti will begin. Mad bhaktim labhate param. So now this third central six chapters, will basically talk about the path of jnana, and while talking about the path of jnana, they will talk about how one can rise from this path of jnana upwards to the path of from the level of jnana, one can rise to the level of prema and enter the complete spiritual world, the fully manifested spiritual reality. Is this clear? Any questions about this? Please find this. So now, this last section has some interesting structure and flow. So our acharya described that 13.22 is a very important verse. Purushah prakriti sthohi bhumte prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sangosya sadesat yoni janmasu.
So he says this is like the
Mahavakya of the Bhagavad Gita. This is the most important verse from which we start understanding the whole nature of material existence.
So just like
Acharya explained that just like every tree begins with a bij. So this verse which shows that how the soul gets embedded in material nature, purushah prakriti sthohi bhunte prakriti jan gunan, because of the desire to enjoy. And what happens by that? Karanam guna sangosya, by the association of modes, sad asad yoni janmasu. One gets good and bad in the world.
So this is like the Mahavakya, and it is like the bija. Bija, just like a
seed gives rise to a full tree.
This is the bija, which gives rise to the full tree of material existence. So now,
this tree is talked about in the 15th chapter, Urdhamula Madhya Shakam. So this tree, the whole tree of material existence, starts from a seed. That seed is the desire to enjoy. Now interestingly, the seed actually, the tree, I
show the tree to explain this, but the tree is
actually upside down. So, but it starts from the beach, can you scrub it and draw it? So, So,
so how it is? If this is the beach, from here the tree is expanding. Actually, it's the Ashwatha tree. So it has many, many other branches also going down like this. So he describes the topmost part is the best part in one. Because the soul is here, and that the soul is spiritual. So the, so now, chapter 6, so the Daiva Asura Sampad Yoga. The Daivas are here, and the Asura, so Devas are at the top of the tree, Asuras are at the bottom of the tree. So this is talk about chapter 16. And those who are in between, and those who are in between, are talked about in chapter 17.
Now Krishna describes in Krishna describes in the 16th chapter that those who have faith and control their desires, they are divine and they will be elevated. Those who don't control their desires and have no faith, they are demoniac. So then Arjuna at the start of the 7th chapter asks the question, what about the Yah Shastra Vidhim Utsrujya Vartate Shraddhayanvita? They reject scripture, they do not follow scripture, but they have faith. And Krishna says, so these two extreme levels are talking about Daiva and Asura, and then the three modes are in between. So, now this whole tree will be talked about. The tree is comprised primarily of the three modes of material nature. That's why to explain this tree, Krishna will talk in the 14th chapter about the three modes. Then he will explain how different people are influenced differently by the three modes in 16th and 17th chapter. 18th chapter will give a full overview of the Bhagavad Gita, and it will culminate with coming from this level to this level. So basically, Arvalram Shaktipur is not here, he asked this question. The Bhakti, the Bhagavad Gita is quite theistic, it's highly devotionally oriented. So why is Shankaracharya included in the Prasthanatraya? The reason is that actually without the other two sets of books, the Upanishads and the Vedanta Sutra, they are mostly analytical. And there is not much sadhana, a social culture and social life talked about. Because the Upanishads are primarily meant for jnanis who have renounced the world and are just sitting and contemplating. So now contemplation, intellectual contemplation analysis is possible for only a few number of people. So if the school of thought has to spread wide, now everybody cannot be intellectual. So there has to be a practical plan for action. And that's why Shankaracharya recognized that if the vast number of people who have left Hinduism and gone to Buddhism, if they are to be brought back, and the Buddhist scholars can be defeated and defeated using Vedanta. But if the masters have to be brought back, they have to be given a practical way of practice. So, and that he considered to be bhakti. So now bhakti, because of this, they start thinking that bhakti is for less intelligent people. But actually Prabhupada explains in the purport of 7.2 and 3 that actually bhakti is not for less intelligent people. Bhakti is so glorious that it can be practiced even by less intelligent people. But the idea is that bhakti offers a means by which a large mass of people can also practice spirituality. So now let us continue with our discussion of this third particular 13th chapter. See, I did an overview of the last section. And we keep this in mind that Krishna is going to talk about jnana and taking us from jnana to bhakti. So now this chapter, when we talk about it, there will be a lot of verses which are ambiguous. Some verses seem to be talking about Paramatma or Atma. And sometimes they seem to be talking about both. And different acharyas, whether they are Vaishnavas or Mayavadis, they all given different interpretations. And sometimes it can be a little intricate. But in spite of all that, what is clear is even in this chapter, which is a chapter about jnana, talking about technical jnana terms, still Krishna emphasizes bhakti very unambiguously. So in that sense, the chapter's ambiguity does not make it ambiguous about the position of bhakti. There will be ambiguity, lack of clarity about some terms, but still the prime importance of bhakti is very clear even in this chapter, and we'll see how it is so. Yes, Prabhu?
Thank you for explaining this particular tree and the chapter flow, but where does the chapter 14 come? Because whole flow you didn't...
No, so chapter 14 is basically explaining how the tree is comprised of. Because this whole tree expands. Chapter 13 describes the root desire. And then Purusha Prakriti Sthayi Bhute Prakriti Janvanam Karanam Guna Sangos. It's a Guna Sangha. So how that Guna Sangha takes place, how the Gunas influence the soul is described in the 14th chapter. And those who are influenced very extremely by the modes, those who are in goodness and those who are in ignorance, they are described in 16th, and then those who are intermediately influenced, they are described in 17th chapter. Okay? Yes, no? Yes. How can the superior energy, Jivatma, be influenced by the material inferior energy, which is material energy? That is possible only when the Jivatma desires. See, how it works is that when we desire to enjoy Maya, then we come under the clutches of Maya. And then the entanglement and the fall down starts. That's why even this verse, Vijayavakya, is Purusha Prakriti Stohi Bhungte Prakriti Jan Gunan. So because he desires to enjoy, that's why the fall starts. Just like, you know, there's a television set. Now the television set can have many, many programs going on, but it is for me to turn on the television set and start seeing it. And when I start seeing it, I know, then this channel is, this program is there, this program is there, this match is going on, this movie is here, this song is there. And then one can get completely entangled and maybe spend hours and hours on that whole thing. But the whole thing begins with, the TV doesn't open itself and come and watch me. Now, we go and turn on the TV. So like that, matter is dead. So in that sense, matter cannot directly control us. But it is we who desire to enjoy matter, and then Maya catches us. So everything begins with our desire. Krishna bolya jiva, bhogavancha kare, nikatastha maya tare jhapatiya dare. So this is a three stage of fall down. Krishna bolya jiva. First thing is we forget Krishna. Because we forget Krishna, that's why when we are remembering Krishna, we are having spiritual happiness. But when we forget Krishna, and the spiritual happiness is not there, we need happiness somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Therefore, bhogavancha kare. We try to enjoy materially. And as soon as we desire, we come into the realm of Prakriti. And then we are caught. Just like, you know, as long as Sita was in the Lakshman Rekha, Ravana could not do anything. But as soon as Sita, by her own will, came out of Lakshman Rekha, Ravana grabbed her. So like that, and the soul, as long as it's in a spiritual position, Maya cannot do anything. The Maya can tempt the soul, but the soul personally comes out. Comes from the spiritual level to the material level. Once he comes down to the material level, he loses control. Then he gets caught. So it all begins with our desire. And the whole process of bhakti ultimately is a transformation of desires. Spiritual advancement means that our desires change, especially our conscious desires and our subconscious desires. Both change. Okay? So let's move forward. Now till now in this chapter, Krishna has talked about Kshetra and Kshetrajna. So Arjuna asked those six questions, and Krishna, while describing the Kshetra and Kshetrajna, talked about how the Kshetra, 6th, 7th verses we discussed, that Mahabhutani Ahankaro Buddhir Avyaktamevacha. These are the components of material nature. Now the Mahabharata described that there are three kinds of Sankhya. Sankhya, they call it, to put it simply, you know, there is atheistic Sankhya, spiritual Sankhya, and devotional Sankhya. That means 24 Sankhya, 25 Sankhya, and 26 Sankhya. That means 24 Sankhya means this Sankhya philosophy accepts there are only 24 elements and doesn't accept the idea of any spiritual reality. Then there is 25 Sankhya is that which accepts the Atma, but only the Atma. So that is what is adopted by Mayavadis. The only one spirituality. 26 Sankhya means it accepts both these Atma and the Paramatma. And the 26 Sankhya is what is talked about in the Bhagavad Gita as well as the Bhagavatam by Lord Kapildev. So now after describing the Kshetra, now Krishna will move forward to describe the Jnana. So knowledge. Amanitvam adambhitvam ahimsa shantirarjavam acharyopasanam shaucham Thairyamatma vinigraha Idriyartheshu vairagyam Anahankara evacha Namabhutyujaravyadhi Dukha doshana darshanam Shaktavitvangaha Kutadaragrahadishu Ityamcha samachittatvam Ishtanishtopapattishu Aichananya yogena Bhaktiravyabhicharini Vesha sevitvam अरतिर्जन संसदि आध्यात्म ज्ञान नित्यत्वं तत्वज्ञानार्थ दर्शनम् एतद् ज्ञानमिति प्रोक्तम् अज्ञानम् यदतो अन्यथा.
Approaching the bonafide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of the birth, death, old age and the disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home and the rest, even mindedness amid prison and unprisoned events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization and philosophical search for the absolute truth, all this I declare to be the knowledge. And besides this, whatever there may be, it is knowledge.
So now, three, four important observations. First is, Krishna talks about knowledge in terms of qualities. Now, Vedic modern society talks about knowledge in terms of information. Vedic culture talks about knowledge in terms of transformation. What we know is not as important as what is the effect on us of what we know. So I may be an academic scholar who might have all studied Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, Goswami literature, Gita Govinda, and all that. You know that most of you know that past time Radhanath Maharaj, he was giving a lecture in America, and then some bearded professor sitting at the back, he said, "Swami, why I have done my PhD in Gita Govinda and I know what Krishna does in Vrindavan with the gopis. Now why do you worship such a lusty god? You know, can't you find somebody better to worship?" So Maharaj told him, "With due respect to you, I would like to inform you that you have done your PhD without passing your KG." Yes, Lord, what do you mean? So he said that, you know, actually the pastimes of Radha and Krishna in the spiritual world are the culmination, the topmost summit of spiritual realization. And spiritual realization begins, the KG is to realize that you are not the body and the soul. And if you want to realize that you are not the body and the soul, you have to follow the regulative principles. No meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling, no illicit sex, and no cigarette smoking. And he had a cigarette in his hand. So, then Bharat was talking with him and then he says, "Hey, my wife is calling me." Bharat says, "Krishna says, Sarvadharman Paritya Jamma Mekam." So he went away. So the point is that actually it is not by academic study that one can enter into the mysteries of spiritual understanding. Why? Because spiritual reality is not like material reality. The material reality also to some extent is determined by our conscious perception. But to some extent, material reality is objective. Okay, I can see this. This is made of stone. So you can see also it is made of stone. I can also see it is made of stone. But with respect to spiritual reality, it's an entirely different realm. And it requires, just like if there are some small, there is a villager, there are some tribals who never know, who don't even know what is the concept of a language. Leave alone reading, they don't even know the concept of a language. And they study objects very systematically in terms of their weight, their size, their dimension, their color, their composition. But if you provide them with a book, present them with a book, just look at it. What is its weight? What is its size? Such a person who has no conception of language is brought to a library. It is, all these people are wasting their time, lazy bums, sitting and looking at these pieces of paper. Isn't it? So now, it is not by a further addition of knowledge. You know, that, okay, if you just, okay, you have measured the height of this book, but you have not measured its weight. You have measured the weight, but you have not measured the thickness of the paper. So by the dimensions, the further measurement of the dimensions of the physical level, one is not going to gain understanding of the book. Although those dimensions might also be useful. But one needs a complete, they call it a quantum leap in physics. You know, quantum leap. You know, you use it not as a step-by-step jump, but even a leap of consciousness by which one can start understanding the concept of reading. And then read and relish a book. And when one starts reading a book, then one understands that the object is the same, but it is not the same. A whole new world of, a whole new universe of understanding and learning and enjoying has opened up when one rises to that higher level. So this is a simple example within our day-to-day understanding of how a paradigm shift can result when there is a higher understanding that comes. The same way, you know, Krishna's pastimes, whether it be with the gopis or even with the gopas, they are actually, you know, people don't seem to misunderstand Krishna's pastimes with the gopas, but they may think of them just as an ordinary boy and playing with his friends. But actually it requires a elevation of consciousness, a transformation of one's modes. So just as education leads to not just additional ways of measuring the size of a book or the composition of a book, it leads to an entirely different way of thinking. So actually if you think about it from an objective point of view, learning a language is quite complicated. See, first of all there are certain abstract symbols. You know, if you try to learn a new language, if you try to learn Bengali, the way A is written, the word J is written, first of all there are abstract symbols that we have to learn. Then we have to find out what is the correlation of abstract symbols with certain sounds of speech. Then we have to find out how those sounds of speech combine together to convey certain semantic units, certain meanings. And how those symbols, are abstract symbols, are combined together as written text and as units of meaning. And then after one does all of that, then one starts understanding it. So it's a very complicated process in one sense. We do it instinctively. But so there is, you know, normally there is something called as synthetic understanding and analytic understanding. So just like when we learn our first language, our mother tongue, when we learn our mother tongue, we hardly ever bother about grammar. Isn't it? Our parents speak something to us and we just repeat. And we learn the whole language, practically speaking, without knowing its grammar. Why? Because it is a lived language for us. So then we hear certain people speak, we hear certain people speaking some text, by response we start understanding it. So this is called synthetic learning, where actually we don't, analytic learning means we break the language. Okay, this is an adjective, this is a noun, this is a preposition, this is a pronoun, this is the adverb. And this is the way you can bring these together. This is the way you should not bring these together. And you learn all that, and at the end of it, one may know many rules, but may not be able to understand the language or speak the language. So, the analytic way is to break things into their components and then try to bring them together. The synthetic way is to live with the complete things as they are and learn as we go along with it. So now the academic approach to study is analyze things, break things into their components. Break things into their components and then try to bring them together. But that doesn't work for spirituality very much. Synthetic way, one lives in the association of devotees and one learns the culture. And then not only the culture, we learn the philosophy also. So what happens when we live in the association of devotees? We see devotees living with certain qualities, certain values. And those values are what are imbibed by us. So Krishna is talking about those values over here. He's not just talking about information in terms of knowledge in terms of information. So amanitvam, adambitvam, all these are qualities. Prabhupada, this is one of Prabhupada's most brilliant and instructive purports in the whole Bhagavad Gita. We won't be able to go into all of it, but here Prabhupada gives the classic definition of humility. Humility means to not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. So it's a very beautiful definition. It doesn't mean that one should not be honored by others, or one should not, it doesn't mean that one should do dishonorable things. But it means that our actions should be not be motivated by honor, by the desire for honor. Our actions should have a higher motivation. So now Prabhupada explains his purport that among all these elements, the education begins with, the knowledge begins with Janma Mrityu Jaragadi Dukkha Doshanu Darshanam. Dukkha Doshanu Darshanam. So, that understand that this world is a place of misery and want to get out. Without that, all the knowledge that we acquire, Prabhupada had some very nice conversation with many different people. There was Professor Benford, who came to meet Prabhupada, I think, in Princeton. So, when he was Prabhupada, Prabhupada told him, so, what is the current scientific knowledge about the soul? I mean, currently there is no scientific knowledge about the soul. So that means there is no scientific knowledge at all. Prabhupada was shaken, professor of science. No, Swamiji, scientific knowledge is a different category of knowledge. And spiritual knowledge is also a different category of knowledge. Now we have so much scientific knowledge. So they were walking in a, they had gone for a morning walk together. So he said, just look at this grass. Now we have two big volumes of books which explain how this grass grows. So Prabhupada said, even without your volume, the grass is growing. Even without your volume, the grass is growing. He now decided to go with that. But, if God did not want us to study the grass, then why did he put the grass there? So Prabhupada also knows this. Prabhupada said, my point is that you study the grass and you forget the God who put the grass there. So, Prabhupada said that actually knowledge begins with the foundational things. Actually, the whole world, where does it come from? That has been foundational knowledge. And who is it that is knowing? Who is it that has created the objects of knowledge for us? And who is it that is the subject of knowledge? These two are foundations for knowledge. Krishna will talk later on, jnanam, jnanam, jnana gamyam. So, the foundation of knowledge is very, very shaky in modern science. Science has advanced tremendously in terms of technology. Of course, technology has its flip side, it's very dangerous downside it has. But it has advanced in terms of manipulation of matter. But even in terms of understanding of matter, it doesn't have much understanding. The scientists themselves are very, very confused. You know, when Planck and Bohr and all the scientists developed the quantum theory. So Einstein was developing the relativity theory at the time. And Einstein felt this quantum theory is nonsense. Because he felt that actually quantum theory says that nothing like this is existing. Everything is just waves. So that's why he made that famous statement, God does not play dice. So, but eventually as the years passed on, the quantum theory seemed to be true. And more evidence started coming in for that. So Einstein, you know, he died a frustrated man. And because he, you know, he said, the whole quantum theory seems crazy. And he, one of his quotes is that, you know, he's, by the research, by the development of physics, you know, I feel like I'm standing on a ground and the ground has been pulled off from below. And wherever I see, there is no place to stand on it. So actually, we won't go into technical details. But the point is, science, as far as foundational understanding is concerned, is very confused right now. Very, very confused about the nature of reality. Even material reality. Because when you divorce material reality from its source, it becomes very difficult to understand. And even if we understand it, we cannot understand its full purpose. So Krishna talks about knowledge here in terms of qualities. And then there's another story of Prabhupada. So one scientist came to Prabhupada and he said, Prabhupada, we have studied so many things. And we have studied about our trees and grass and planets and this and that. So Prabhupada told him, you know, your study is like the study of a prisoner who studies everything about the prison. The wall, the bars, the floor, the windows, but doesn't ask where is the key of the lock. Because you are studying everything, but you are not understanding that ultimately this world is a place of misery. And you have to continue the cycle of birth and death. So without understanding that, all other study, you can say it's useful, but from the ultimate point of view, it's useless. So when you understand, Janmasthu Jaradadi Dukkha Doshana Darshanam. So now whole new branches come in called cryonics. You know, what is cryonics? Cryonics means, when a person dies, they freeze his body in a deep freeze. And then they hope that in future, whenever we will develop the technology for reviving the body, then we will revive the body and we will come back to life. So there is one cryonic scientist, Robert Ettinger, he was a pioneer. So he has put his mother, his wife, himself. So 105 people till now have been preserved like this, in deep freeze. And they are hoping that in future the technology will come by which we will all be revived. So now, you know, we may laugh at how in Egypt the pharaohs would make mummies of themselves and they preserve their body in the hope that they will come back to life. But modern scientists are doing the same thing. And they spend a fortune on that. And it's an absurd idea because for all practical purposes, even if we preserve the body, you know, the whole process of freezing the body itself damages the body. And then, and actually, as per the current technology, freezing the body is irreversible. They call it cryopreservation, but it's cryodestruction. Because they can't reverse it. If you have frozen the body, you cannot put the body on a heater and heat it and it will come back to normal. Leave alone life coming back, even the normal structure of the body doesn't stay. And it will not be restored. So it's a huge waste of time. But still, the urge for immortality is there. But the problem is, because of not knowing of the spiritual level, people are trying to bring the immortality at the material level. So the urge for immortality is natural, but instead of recognizing that immortality can be regained at the spiritual level, we try to make it at the material level. So Krishna says that, no, knowledge will begin when one understands that janma mrityu chara vyadhi dukkha dosha andasham. These are the miseries of material existence, and we have to go beyond it. Now science also says that our purpose is to remove miseries. So they say technology is what purpose? Oh, earlier it was hot, now we have a fan, we have a cooler. But what happens? They don't go to foundational miseries. They talk about small miseries they talk about, but not foundational miseries, birth, old age, disease and death. And there's a well-known doctor who wrote René Dubois. He wrote a book called Health in the 21st Century, The Future of an Illusion. That is the name of the book itself. Health in the 21st Century, The Future of an Illusion. And very insightfully he analyzes, science claims that, you know, we have cured chicken pox, we have cured smallpox, and we almost cured polio also. We have found vaccines and have eradicated the plague. But he says that actually diseases are a product of the socio-cultural and socio-economic circumstances that we live in. So when people were living in farms, at that time rats are more common. And so plagues will be there. So he said it is not that science removed plagues, but by the industrial revolution, when the lifestyle changed, that disease got retired automatically. But he said the industrial revolution and subsequent progress has got its own diseases. And now we have such terrible diseases. We have AIDS, we have cancer, we have Alzheimer's, Parkinson's. Now especially these brain degenerative diseases, dementia, they call it, they are very bad diseases. A person just lives like a vegetable. He doesn't know. You know, he will stay in his home, but he can't recognize his friend. He can't recognize his wife can't recognize the husband. The husband can't recognize the wife. It's very miserable diseases. So, the point is, so he is a doctor only. He concludes that we will never be able to remove disease, because even if we fight and remove one disease, what is going to happen is the socio-cultural circumstances are going to create certain diseases. So cancer, AIDS, and brain degenerative diseases were not at all common 50 or 100 years ago. Heart attacks. Now practically non-existent 50 to 100 years ago. But now they are so common. So in the Mumbai Stock Exchange, because the stocks fall so much high up and down, so you know, and people get heart attacks and die. So in the stock exchange only they have built defibrillator over there. Now what is a defibrillator? Defibrillator means what happens in a heart attack? Person's heart stops functioning. And when the heart stops functioning, if the blood flow to the brain stops, and the brain dies, then the person is as good as dead. So what they do is, they have to somehow make the heart start functioning again. They can beat the person with the fist to make the heart function, or they have this heavy electrical current. You know, they just take it, tuck, boom, the person jumps up. So now according to law, in the stock exchange, wherever you build a stock exchange, you have to put defibrillator. So, and the worst part happens is cardiovascularization, they call it. Sometimes the person's heart stops functioning, but he doesn't lose consciousness. Then actually when he's given the shock, he feels the full shock through his body. It's so painful. It's like a live current, heavy current going through the body. So the kind of diseases that are there are, and as per total number, diseases are not exist at all. That's why janma mrityu chara vyadhi dukkha dosha anudarshanam. There is an international gerontology association. So I talked about disease, I talked about death. Old age. The gerontology is a study of old age. So, gerontology. So they had an idea that we can change. You know, we can reverse the old age. So they tried to find out. They thought, now what is it that causes people to age? See, actually, they have no understanding. If you see, they have absolutely no understanding why people grow old. Now we know that biologically speaking, the cells are dying and cells are being reproduced. When the reproduction rate of the cells become lesser than the production, sorry, when the death rate becomes more than the birth rate, then the person died. But why does this happen? They don't know that. So they try to find out, is there, now you know, whatever powers the scriptures ascribe to God, scientists ascribe to genes. They ascribe, the genes has become like their magic wand. So they say that actually there must be some gene which causes the decreased reproduction of the cells. So if we find that gene and remove that gene from the body, then you can live forever. So now they tried that, they took one gene and they removed that. Nothing happened except some, the person got some other problem. Then they removed another gene, and now they have said, now we think that actually it's not one gene, but it's a whole pattern of genes. And that pattern of genes plays so many other functions in the body that removing it is not practical. So, the International Gerontology Association, they made a promise, they made a statement in public interest. They said, despite all the advertisements that may come about, is as of now, anywhere in the scientific world, there is no technology, no mechanism, no medicine, no surgery that can reverse, stop or slow the aging process. That cannot reverse, stop or slow the aging process. Reverse means you cannot make an old man young. Stop means you cannot stop a young man from going old. And slow, you cannot make it slower also. It will just go on at its own pace. So what can gerontology do then? It can't do anything except to create an illusion that you are not growing old. So Jayadvara writes that, back to our editorial, says when he turned 50, now all these gerontological agencies, they find out when a person has become 50-year-old, you know, and they have this big database. And automatically, they send a free parcel. You know, so whatever problem you have, you know, if you have stomach problem, then we have some digestive therapy. If you have heart problem, we have cardiac therapy. If you have back problem, we have backbone therapy. And yet this Jayadvara, forget it you fellows, you need some illusion therapy. Because ultimately, how many of these can we try? So actually, what has happened is, like I mentioned earlier, in the first class you might remember, that in the 1940s, people found that the number of cigarette smokers was fixed. And now the males are all smoking. Then how do you expand the market? Target the females. That's how they started making a special cigarette, which was meant for females. So similarly, the advertising agencies have found that the number of people who are in the middle, who are in the youth or middle age are limited. And now, in order to expand their market, they have made special advertisements which target children and which target old people. And now this is a huge agency. And what happens is they have old people who are relatively healthy. Actually, old age is the best time for enjoyment. Why? Because they say now you don't have any responsibilities, you don't have any anxieties, you're just free to enjoy. And there are whole industry of products designed just for old people. So the idea is that old people now have their pensions and they have some money with them. So they just try to squeeze out the money from the old people. The amount of advertisements which are nowadays targeted towards elderly people. See, now we have a whole genre of politically correct language. Politically correct language means, you know, you should not call an African as a Negro. A black person, you call a black person a Negro, you should call an African American. You should not call as a short person as a short. You should call him vertically challenged. You should not call a prostitute a prostitute. You call a professional sex worker. So like that, they are old people, you should call them old people. You call them senior citizens. So now it's a very polite way of putting it. But the fact, the reality is harsh. Well, they have a whole genre of advertisements which are targeted towards old people. And what happens is people just continue trying to enjoy even in old age. So, Jayadvara wrote an editorial. in Bhaktivinoda, it is called the grow young sort of drug was introduced. Basically, nowadays, what has happened is the age when men become sexually important has alarmingly dropped. And earlier, people were potent in the age of 60s or 65 also. Now, by the year 45, 50, many people become important. And then, if throughout their lives, they have just lived for the purpose of sexual enjoyment, and suddenly they become incapable of sexual enjoyment. So they just don't know what I am living for. So they become very miserable, and that's why there's a huge field of research now, how to revive people's sexual potency. So there was one drug discovered called Viagra. So Viagra, what was this Viagra? He said that it will make old people young, and then you can enjoy. And this drug became very, very popular. But then they found that this, basically, whenever a person becomes sexually excited, the whole body becomes agitated. Actually, what doctors have said, that when a person engages in sex, then the exhaustion that comes from the body is like from a full, you go for a full workout for 1 or 2 hours, the whole body gets shaken like that, because the person becomes very passionate. But of course, in the workout you get some physical benefit, here you get only physical drainage. But the point is, people get, that's why, you know, generally after people have sexual intercourse, they get exhausted, they go to sleep, because it's very exhausting. So what happens is, when people are old, their hearts don't have the capacity to sustain that excitement. So when they found that, they found that these people who take Viagra, and especially if they have some earlier heart problems, and their heart problems get exaggerated, aggravated, and many times people get heart attacks while trying to enjoy and they die. So then, you know, many cases happen like this, so people, the American government decided that we should ban this drug. Ban this drug, because so many heart attacks are happening. But then the people oppose so much. Isn't, we don't have heart problems. Why should we be deprived for those who have heart problems? Then the American government made a rule that, okay, this drug can be given only at a physician's recommendation. The physician should tell, this person doesn't have any heart problem, then he will be given. So what happened was, people were so desperate that they have their regular physician who knows that he has a heart problem, then go to some other physician, get a letter from him that I don't have a heart problem, get the Viagra, and go and have sexual intercourse, get a heart attack and die. So Jayadeva said, what you need is not Viagra, but Vairagya. So, it's very tragic. At least in old age, people should become detached and should be allowed to practice spiritual life. Now Shankaracharya says, what is that verse? Angam galitam palitam mundam dashanam vihinam jatu tundam vriddho yati gruhitva dandam tad apina munchiti asha pindam. This is a very graphic verse, poetic also, rhythmic. Angam galitam palitam mundam. So the whole limbs have become shaky and the hair has got gone now. Palitam mundam dashanam vihinam jatu tundam. All the teeth have fallen away. Vriddho yati gruhitva dandam. So one has to say, okay, you take a stick now. But tadappi na munchiti asha pindam. Even then the desire doesn't go away. So now what to speak of, the enjoyment is so strong that the desire still doesn't go away. But our society systematically keeps increasing the desire. What to speak of? It's very tragic. So now, of course, what another genre of advertisements was? For small children. Children who can't think of anything, they have cartoon characters, any of the cartoon, you know, they purchase some doll, this, that. So, you know, they have this Barbie dolls, small Barbie dolls. So now small baby children, you know, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, they are shown playing with the Barbie doll. They say, I also want a Barbie doll. And then what happens? Then the Barbie dolls, all the children have purchased. So now how do you increase your market? Now they say, oh, the Barbie doll has got a boyfriend. So Barbos. So you have Barbos. And then, so children are 2, 3, 4 years old, you know. He has got a boyfriend now. And then they have a boyfriend. And then, now the children have purchased that also. And how do you increase further? Oh, they have quarrel now. And now the Barbos has gone away. So you get another boyfriend now. And then you get them married. And then they have a divorce. So there is so much marketing. Small children. So now many countries have made laws banning advertisements to children below the age of 6 or 7. Because they say that till a person develops the discrimination capacity, you know, the ability to discriminate between what is true and what is false advertisement, a person should not be allowed to be targeted by advertisements. But the fact is, biological is age is no guarantee of development of discrimination. You know, even old people don't necessarily have any discrimination ability, older people. But, you know, this is very tragic that, that even old people as well as young people. So the idea is that materialistic people are just out to exploit the last dollar that is there with a person. But Vedic culture is very clear. Janmukti jaragadi dukkha dosham darshanam. Recognizes. Here is the word darshanam. Darshanam means see. Like we take darshan of the deities, anudarshanam. Take darshan of the deities. Like I take darshan of old age, disease and death. So when I was in Bhaktivedanta Hospital, I got one book about the various diseases. So I made a resolution that I will read something about a new disease every day 15 minutes. So, you know, it is very sobering. They are called doctors currently. There are 40,000 diseases. There are different estimates. There are 40,000 diseases. And only 4,000 diseases are known to be curable. So all other diseases, you got this disease, suffer and die. It's like that. They can't do anything. So of course, some people may claim that diseases are curable and diseases are not curable, but it's very, very, very shocking, the reality of this world. So, Krishna tells that once one begins with this, then actually when this foundation is there, then all the other qualities come along. Because arati rana viswanga, one will get detached, because one will understand everything is temporary. Now Prabhupada explained that the most important among this is manchanana yogena bhaktir avyabhicharini. So unflinching bhakti. Krishna will repeat his avyabhicharini bhakti in the 14th chapter again. When he will talk about the transcending of the modes. So this avyabhicharini bhakti is actually essential even for the jnanis. So now Krishna is talking about the sadhana of a jnanis. And the jnanis have to develop these qualities by which they can make spiritual advancement. But he, even within the jnanis sadhana, he's saying, I'm talking about bhakti, and what kind of bhakti? Avyabhicharini, unbreakable, unflinching bhakti. And adhyatma jnanatyattvam tattva jnanatha darshanam. One understands the importance of philosophical knowledge and focuses on that philosophical knowledge. So actually as devotees, we can also, Prabhupada gives us the devotional application of all these principles. So, etat jnanam iti proktam ajnanam yadatanyatha. Everything apart from this is ajnan. Now somebody may say, it's not ajnan. You know, my cell phone works, my laptop works, my internet connection works. It's not ajnan, it's knowledge. Yes, it is knowledge in the sense that we know how to think, how to make things work. But we don't know why to make things work. So knowledge is of not of much use unless it is connected to the ultimate purpose. Therefore, etat jnanam iti proktam ajnanam yadatanyatha. See, there are, ignorance is bad, but ignorance of ignorance is worse. If I am ignorant and I know that I am ignorant, then there is at least some hope that I will become knowledgeable. But if I am ignorant and if I think that I know, then there is no hope of educating me. So actually there are three levels. You know, somebody may argue that science is also a quest for knowledge. And why do you criticize scientists? Yes, we don't criticize that spirit of the quest for knowledge. In fact, the quest for knowledge is talked about Adhato Brahma Jignasa. But what happens is, Prabhupada explains in a Bhavanam purport, at modern science, what it does, it expands the ignorance. It expands the ignorance. What does it mean to expand the ignorance? You know, we expand our knowledge within the realm of ignorance. This material knowledge world is tamasoma jyotirgama. So within the realm of tamas, we expand our ignorance. We expand our knowledge, but that is only expanding our ignorance because we don't get any real knowledge. And this is very beautifully illustrated in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song, Vidyara Vilasi. He says, what is it? Moha janamiya anitya samsare. What is the first part?
Jada vidyayata mayara vaibhava tomara bhajane badha मोहजनमिया नित्य संसारे जीवा के कारय गाधा से गाधा होइया संसारे र बोझा वही नु अनेक काला.
So he goes on and describes, it's a long song, but what he's describing is that, you know, I cultivated this knowledge, but what happened to this knowledge? This knowledge is like a burden on the head. It did not actually enlighten me, it just simply burdened me. Jiva ke karaye gadha. So what happens? So there are three levels, you know, I'm ignorant and I know I'm ignorant. I'm ignorant and I think I'm knowledgeable. And the worst part is science doesn't only do that. Especially when you're talking about science, there may be pure scientists who are searching for truth, but majority of the scientists are materialistic. So the worst thing that is, I consider my ignorance to be truth, and third level is, I consider truth to be ignorance. That means God, soul, see, all this is unscientific, all this is sentimental, all this is mythological, all this is imaginary. So to be ignorant, common people, to be ignorant and to think that ignorance to be knowledge is worse, to be ignorant to think that I am knowledge, and to think knowledge to be ignorance, that is even worse. So that's why, etat jnanam iti proktam, ajnanam yata tonyatha. Everything else is ignorance. So, now after describing this, this is the process of jnana. How one can acquire jnana is described in this process. So, now Krishna will talk about jnana. What is it that is to acquire knowledge about? I am studying, but what is it that I should be studying? So Krishna will tell that in one verse, and he will also tell the fruit of studying that. Jnanam yattat pravakshami yajnatvamrutamashnute nadimat param brahma nasattannasa buchyate.
I shall now explain the knowable, knowing which will taste the eternal Brahman, the spirit, beamingness and someone to me, lies beyond the cause and effect of this material.
So anadi mat param brahma. So now this mat param brahma, so this, what is this reference to? It can refer to the living entity, it can refer to Brahman also. So the living entity is subordinate, for him the Lord is the supreme, Matparam. But the Brahmajyoti is also subordinate to the Lord. So this is the same theme which most of these verses can be understood to refer to the personal or the impersonal aspect. So Jiva to the Lord also. But he says, yat jnatva, if you understand this, what will happen? Amrutam ashnute. One attain eternity. Krishna promised the same Amrutatva may also in 2.15. Somrutatvaya kalpate. So now what is this jnana? He will start describing in the next verse. Sarvata pani padam tad sarvato akshishiro mukham sarvata shrutiman loke sarvam avritya tishtati.
Everywhere are his hands and legs, his eyes, heads and faces, and he has ears everywhere. In this way the superfluous exists, providing everything.
So, now this verse, now this more section, most of the verses in the section are similar to what is given in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad. The Shvetashvatara Upanishad is one of the most personalistic of all the Upanishads. You know, personalism comes out very, very clearly in the Upanishads. As well as that famous verse Prabhupada called, Apani Pado Javana Grahita Pashyate Chaksho Sasranotya Karanaha. It's a very important verse. Pashyati, he sees, although a chaksho, he has no eyes but he sees, he has no ears but he hears. So that is Shvetashvatara Upanishad. So this verse also, exact verse is there in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad also. Now, this verse was a source of perplexity for Advaita Acharya. Because, what does it mean, everywhere are his hands, everywhere are his legs? How do we know that Krishna is the spiritual world? And the impersonalists try to interpret it metaphorically by saying that Nirguna Brahma becomes Saguna everywhere. But Baldev Devanshan explained that the concept of Saguna Brahma explicitly as differentiated when Nirguna Brahma is not talked about anywhere in the scriptures. So the Vaishnava understanding is that, Prabhupada explained, this refers to the Paramatma. The Paramatma has his hands and legs, the Paramatma has his ears, and the Paramatma exists everywhere. He exists in our heart and he also exists Andantarastha Paramanu Chayantarastham. He exists even in the atoms. Now, of course, if we take it figuratively, it can also refer to Brahman. Brahman is present everywhere. But Advaita Acharya was not satisfied with his understanding. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained to him the inner depth, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came in a dream and explained to him and later on glorified him. So what is the understanding? He said that actually wherever a devotee glorifies him, Krishna is there to hear it. Yatra gayanti madbhakta, tatra nishthami narada. So, wherever a devotee offers bhoga to him, Krishna is there to receive the bhoga. Wherever a devotee bows down, Krishna is there to receive the obeisances. So in that sense, Krishna is available everywhere for the devotee. So this verse demonstrates the universal, omnipresent availability of Bhagavan. So even if you can take it as representing Bhagavan, Krishna is available everywhere. That's how we can, devotees can do Manas Puja. We can do Manas Puja, and what happens in Manas Puja? Actually, we please Krishna. And Krishna reciprocates. One time our devotees, they were in Toronto. And they were doing book distribution. And there was a sheriff and a mayor. The sheriff had given permission for distributing books. But Toronto had done but the mayor and sheriff were at loggerheads. So the sheriff had given permission, but he had gone out of station. So the devotees were distributing books. The mayor was informed. The mayor said, what is this? They are disrupting the law, dancing in the streets. So he sent the police and had them arrested. And the devotees were put in jail. So, devotees many times had to go to jail, and Prabhupada was very fearless. One time one devotee in Australia, he was put in jail, and he wrote to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I am in jail, and I have no bail. What should I do? So Prabhupada said, what is the need to come out of jail? Please send me jail. Of course, he came out, but Prabhupada's spirit was that keep preaching inside the jail. So these devotees are very depressed. So what happened when they were very depressed? Because the next day was Sunday program, and they are used to, all of them would go out to different places, and Sunday they would come together. So then they were, early morning when they were just distributing the final books, they were arrested. And they were put in jail. Then one of them remembered, and nobody says, we can do Manas Puja also. So he said, we will have Manas Sunday feast now. So then they say, yes. And all of them got excited. He says, okay, I will cook gulab jamun. I will cook halwa. I will cook pakodas. I will cook puri. And then the police were outside, were guarding. As it is, surprised by the strange dress, but now they got all of them really active. What are they doing? Shaking and moving and are these people crazy? Yeah, they look crazy, but they also look happy. And then, so they had their whole Sunday feast cooking, and after the cooking was there, then they had a real Sunday feast class, a real Sunday feast kirtan, and then they all sat down to prasad. And they all, seriously, they all chanted Mahaprasad, they sat down and taking prasad. After all of them had prasad, they said this was the best feast. Why? Because no shortage of anything. No shortage of anything and no digestion problem. And by that time the temple president had contacted the mayor, and the mayor had said, I have given permission, how can you put them out? So the devotees finished the Sunday feast and they came out. And all the guards are scowling. No, we are outside the jail, you are inside, but you are so happy and we are so miserable. And then they went out and they went to the temple and had the real Sunday feast also. So the point is, Krishna is available everywhere for a devotee. Wherever he may be. So this verse talks about Krishna's universal availability for a devotee, for serving him. Now interestingly, after saying that everywhere is hand and leg, suddenly he will say that actually, don't think of these hands and legs as ordinary mundane. You see, in the next verse, he has no senses only. So this is going to take us to a higher level of understanding. Sarvendriya gunabhasam, sarvendriya vivarjitam, asaktam sarva bhurkchaiva, nirgunam guna bhoktucha. Sarvendriya guna abhasam, source. But at the same time, Sarvendriya, so there are three contradictions talked about in this verse. He has no senses, but he is the source of all senses. He is detached, but he is the maintainer. And he is beyond the modes, but he is the master of the modes. So basically, in this section, the Bhagavad Gita is talking about the transcending to the higher nature of that Supreme Soul. But actually, he is not ordinary. He is transcendent. And this aspect is very important to understand, because Uddhava prays in the second canto, he says, my dear Lord, Now, although you know you are eternal and unborn, you appear to take birth. Although you are supremely powerful, you appear to be afraid and run away from your enemy. Although you are completely self-satisfied, you appear to marry and enjoy with so many women and have household affairs with so many women. And Vinay, this is very bewildering. So actually the point is that Krishna, because he is transcendental, he can do all the things that ordinary people do but without being attached. So now when we understand, now if we see this verse referring to Bhagavan, it's very clear what they are being. So, but if we see these verses as referring to Brahman or as referring to the soul, it becomes very very confusing. It becomes very unclear and vague. So as the soul, obviously the soul is not Sarvabhukchaiva, he is not the maintainer of everything, he can't maintain himself also. Even if we say that the soul refers to Brahman. But the point is that the serious problem which the Mayavadis can't explain is, if the Brahman is non-differentiated spiritual substance, non-differentiated means there is no difference in it. It's all one Satchitananda substance. Then how does this world emerge from it? He says Sarvendriya Vivarjitam is said, but it also says Sarvendriya Gunabhavasam. So how does this whole world emerge from it? How do the senses emerge from it? That can't be explained. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his discussion with both Prakashana Saraswati and Sarvamattacharya, the same argument is there. It's a devastating argument. What is that? The Upanishads describe Saha Aikshitaha. So they say that the universe began with the glance of that supreme, whatever it is. Saha, it can, we understand it mean Bhagavan. But even if for argument's sake, they don't accept that it is Bhagavan. So whatever it is, that absolute truth, you call it Brahman. So he glanced, and that's how the creation began. Now, according to Mayavadis, all senses are a result of Maya. So now, at that time, the creation has not begun. So then, whose senses are there which glanced and started the creation? So the senses that existed before the creation cannot be mundane. The senses that existed before the creation have to be spiritual. And that means in the spiritual reality there are senses. And that means the spiritual reality is personal. So it's a very logical follow-up. Very systematic. So, yeah?
This under category of the Jaina, only knower, only superpower is described.
Yes, that the first verse refers to the soul. Prabhupada's understanding is that Anadi Matparam Brahma Nasattannasa Uchiti. So Anadi Matparam Brahma, that refers to the soul is also beginningless. The soul is actually even beyond material cause and effect. But he is subordinate to the Lord. So first verse, the 30th verse refers to Atma, and 14th to 18th refer to Paramatma. Okay. So after describing again, Krishna continues description in contradictory terms. Where else do we see in our Bhakti Shastri books it's contradictory description, contradictory seeming description? No, in some other book, Ishopanishad. Tadejati, tannaijati, taddure, tadvantike, tadantarasya sarvasya, tadusarvasyasya bahayataha. You know, he's far, he's close, he walks, he does not walk. He's inside everything and he's outside everything. You know, actually, in the mundane world, it's very confusing. An important point, this is actually, when the descriptions of like this are given, they are not said to be contradictory. They are said to be paradox. Paradox means when you give two contradictory seeming descriptions to indicate a higher reality. So paradox is not, a paradox is not necessarily contradiction. Like it is said that if an author writes a book, so they say that often the least, or I'll take it from both ways, what if a question paper, if a teacher is assessing the paper of students, then this is a standard paradox which is given example, the least corrected papers are the most correct. The least corrected papers are the most correct. So what does it mean? At first, it's how least corrected and most correct. But the idea is that they are least corrected because they are only most correct. So the teacher has not made any red mark, no cross mark, no. The least corrected papers are most correct. So this is an example of a paradox, where apparently contradictory statements are given to powerfully convey some deeper point. That means the student studies carefully and writes, his people English correct, and only more correct. So like that, paradox is a common way of teaching truths which are beyond ordinary material understanding. So sarvendriya gunabhasam, sarvendriya vivarjitam. How is that possible? It is the source of all material senses, but he is beyond all matter. In that sense, he himself does not have senses. This is a paradoxical description. Go ahead. Bahirantishya. Naam. Aram charam eva cha. Sukshmatvat tad avigyeyam. Durastham chanti kechatad. Bahir antashya bhutanam. So the super soul is inside us, Paramatma is outside also, everywhere for us. Acharam charameva cha. So moving and non-moving, so this is a very common differentiation which will come. Thavar jangama chara achara. So it's not just physical movement, but also the level of consciousness that corresponds with the ability to move. Now, interestingly, it says sukshmatvad, very subtle. And the section started describing gyaya, but it's describing avigyaya. So the gyaya is avigyaya. The knowable, the to be known is unknowable, it is being said. So now how is it possible? Krishna will answer this in verse 19, of how this avigyaya can be known. And then, durastham chantike chatar. Although it's far away, he's very close. So Prabhupada explains in the purport of tad dure tadvantike. He gives three different examples of the explanation of tad dure tadvantike. He says that for the atheists, because they have turned away from God, so God is very far away. And for the devotees, because they have turned towards God, God is very close. He also says, tad dure tadvantike, he says, the Bhagavan is very, very far away. Tad dure. But Paramatma, tadantike. He is very close. Similarly, he says that actually the Lord is very, very far away, but when the Lord comes as deity, he is tadantike. He gives different explanations. Basically, for the devotee, the Lord is very close. For non-devotee, is very far. Durastham chantike chatat. Then he describes how this Suprasoul appears divided but is united. Avibhaktam cha bhuteshu, vibhaktam iva cha sthitam, bhutabhartru cha tajgeyam, gasishnu prabhavishnu cha. Yes. So, avibhaktam cha bhuteshu, vibhaktam iva cha sthitam. So, avibhaktam is undivided, vibhaktam iva, iva means like. So, why he appears to be divided? Because the super soul is a plenary expansion of the earlier Vishnu forms. So, he expanded only, the word plenary means complete. So, the word plenary actually, Prabhupada uses a lot of parliamentary language. You know, Prabhupada, whenever he was, the whole Prabhupada got, when India had more started functioning under British rule, they had started the government. They had started the railways. And the railways, because India is so chaotic, was an administrative miracle. But to make railways function without colleges and things like that was difficult. So the government had something, developed something called a GBC, Governing Body Commission. So Prabhupada had took that term from the railway. And Prabhupada would use the example when BTG had started. Prabhupada said, keep the wheels moving. Like the railways, their goal is keep the wheels moving. So like that, keep the wheels moving. Keep publishing BTG all the time. So like that, Prabhupada took the word plenary from the parliament. What is that? So plenary session means where a session in which everybody is present. That is called plenary. So plenary expansion. That means he's an expansion but he's fully there. So he's fully there. Plenary expansions. So now the super soul is one but he's expanded into many. So avibhaktam cha bhuteshu vibhaktam yastitam. So actually Paramatma in your heart and Paramatma in my heart is the same. So that's why when we go in front of our spiritual master, actually the spiritual master is not omniscient. But the super soul in the heart guides the spiritual master. This is how you should guide this yoga. So it ultimately depends on one's own sincerity. Even if the spiritual master doesn't know all our specific anarthas or specific problems that we are facing, but because the super soul knows, and the super soul is present in the heart also. So the super soul will inspire the spiritual master to speak to us whatever we need to hear. And that's how the spiritual master will be ultimately instructing us in the right way. So of course, yeah, if we have the facility, we should also talk directly to the spiritual master and explain whatever is there. But ultimately the ultimate guru is the Chaitya Guru. The Chaitya Guru speaks to the spiritual master, to the Viksha Guru and to everyone. So the spiritual master is not, the Chaitya Guru is not divided. In that sense, pure devotee, he is connected with Krishna, and therefore the same super soul is present in our heart. He will convey through the spiritual master what we need to hear. Now, after this, Krishna will go on with his description. Now, this is, he says that all the three phases, creation, maintenance, destruction, he says that is done by the same super soul. Because ultimately, Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, they are guna avatars of the Supreme Lord. Now, after describing this, Krishna will talk further. Next verse is the last verse where he describes about a super soul. Jyotisham pita jyotis tamasah paramuchyate jnanam geyam jnana gamyam
hriti sarvasya vasitam. His source of the light in all luminous objects is beyond the darkness of matter and is unmanifested. His knowledge is the object of knowledge and is the goal of knowledge. He is situated in everyone's heart.
So, vasthitam. So Prabhupada, sthitam is situated. The sthitam is specially situated. Specially situated means he has just come. He is not bound like the soul who is there. He is there just for the sake of liberating the soul. And here three words are used. Jnanam, Gyanam, Jnanagamyam. So Jnanam is knowledge. Gyanam is that which is knowable. And the Prabhupada called it object of knowledge. And Jnanagamyam is the goal of knowledge. Now what is the difference between the object of knowledge and the goal of knowledge? There is a significant difference. You know, Prabhupada explains in On the Way to Krishna, he says, all knowledge comes from Krishna, but all knowledge doesn't begin from Krishna. Now, what does that mean? That means, ultimately, whatever we come to know, it's Matta Smriti Jnana Vapahanche. All knowledge comes from Krishna. But it doesn't begin from Krishna. Means, when I want to know, it's not suddenly I'll think of God. First I'll think about the world around me. Okay, why is this existing? Why is this existing? Probably somebody must have created it. Then gradually I'll go to God. So all knowledge comes from Krishna, but it doesn't begin from Krishna. So in that sense, Gayam first refers to man. So in the category of Gayam, there is Prakriti, Ishwara, Jiva and Ishwara. But the Jnana Gamya, the ultimate goal of knowledge, is not just Jiva, Ishwara and Prakriti. It is the spiritual world. And the spiritual world is not different from Krishna. So in that sense, the Gaya and the Jnanam, Gayam, Jnanagamyam. So the object of knowledge is what we understand the whole nature of the material world. But once we understand the nature of the material world, we try to liberate ourselves from the material world, then when we go back to the spiritual world, there is no need for the knowledge of the material world. Jnanagamyam, the ultimate object of knowledge is to return back to Krishna. So the Vrajavasis, for them the Gaya, the analysis of when Krishna does that through Uddhava. Oh, gopis, don't feel that you are separated from me, because separation from me is impossible, because I am the super soul present in everyone's heart. So the gopis say, don't tell us all this philosophy, tell us when you are coming back. So why? Because for them, they have gone from the Gaya level to the Jnana Gamya level. So in that sense, object of knowledge is what we study, and goal of knowledge is what we aspire for ultimately. There is a slight difference. Yeah? Good question. What do we say when we say Krishna is knowledge? It's a slightly philosophical discussion, but two quick points I'll briefly make. As I discussed earlier, you know, science has no understanding of how we understand. Science has no understanding of how we understand. Did I mention this about the brain? If a bird flies by, if a parrot flies by in front of my eyes. You know, then when a parrot flies by, what happens is that I see the shape, the color, the motion, and maybe the sound. The parrot is chirping. Now all these four come to me as a unified impression. Now scientists say that all our experience and awareness happens in the brain. But the problem is that scientists have found there are different parts of the brain which are connected with different functions. For example, when I raise my hand, it's connected with motor nervous system. So there is one particular area of the brain which is connected with that. So now, now the parts of the brain which sense color, which sense motion, and which sense shape, they are three different parts. They are three different parts. And now, where in the brain does the integration take place? Because there are so many, there are something like millions of neurons, something like 10 million neurons are there in the brain. The count is also increasing all the time. But whatever it is, you know, there is a huge number of neurons, and there is no set of neurons that is connected to all of the neurons. It's not like, you know, all the impressions can come in one place and there the combined perception will take place. So they don't know. And you know, it's not that first I see a shape and then I see the color and then I hear the sound. No, everything comes to me as a coherent integrated input. So what I mean by disintegrated input is, suppose sometimes we see a video. And if the video, the sound and the motion is asynchronized. And what happens is, say there is a movie going on, the hero beats the villain. And the villain falls down and after he has fallen down, some sound comes, long time after that. So, our perception is not asynchronous like that, it is synchronous. So, there is no understanding of how it happens. So, where the integration takes place, we don't know. Where the integration of whatever we perceive from outside takes place, we don't know. And a bigger problem is that, now scientists have found all the brain cells keep changing. So now, suppose I have written over here, Kshetra and Kshetragya. And imagine that moment after moment after moment, just one white particle is being removed from here and put another white particle put over there. The constituent of chalk of the whiteboard that is made, if that is continuously being replaced. So now if the black whiteboard contents are being replaced, then the whole message will be wiped out. If I write something on a paper and I tear off pieces of paper and replace it with new paper, the message will not be there. So like that, our brain cells are dying and are being replaced. So if our memories were supposed to be there in the brain, then our memories should go away. How do the memories stay? So the more scientists are understanding about the brain, the more they are understanding that the brain is great, but still, you know, the brain is not the source of consciousness. So basically, knowledge is given by the super soul. And knowledge, in one sense, is a manifestation of the super soul. Knowledge is not different from the super soul. So Krishna, Tesham Aham Samudharta Muti Samsar Sagara, Sridhar Swami explains the purport. Krishna says, I am the Jnana. How do I deliver my devotees? There are different levels of understanding. Yes, Krishna personally counts, but Krishna says, I give them the Jnana. So he correlates Tesham Aham Samudharta with Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam. He says, I deliver my devotee by giving them the knowledge to be elected. So although there are certain dramatic examples in the history of science where people get inspiration. You know, Archimedes had his Eureka moment. So now, that inspiration is something which science cannot explain. Now, if they say that, how do we analyze, okay, step, this step, this step, this step, this step, and we come to this conclusion. But Sadhapur Prabhu in that book, Consciousness, The Missing Link, he shows how the inspiration, if it has to come by step process, it is impossible. All the neurons in the brain also, if all of them were involved in that processing, still it will not happen in that short time. Few moments inspiration comes. So inspiration comes from the super soul. Inspiration, Gauss was a mathematician and he studied electricity. So he made several laws. And he just got the laws, made the equations, and the equations were working. And he was asked, how did you get it? He says, it's not by my effort, it's just by the grace of God. He was a believer, so he admitted God was. And it was several decades after he died that they worked out the logical step-by-step proof for his laws. So the point is, all knowledge comes from Krishna. So all knowledge is non-different from Krishna. Now, is material knowledge non-different from Krishna? Just like the Asuri Vibhutis are also Vibhutis which are given by Krishna. But they are being used to take people away from Krishna. So all knowledge, in one sense, is a manifestation of Krishna. And especially the knowledge that takes us back towards Krishna is all the more a manifestation of Krishna. See, when we say the Vedas are eternal, it's not that the Vedas, the Vedic texts are eternal. You know, we have this whole thing of, who are that? Madhu and Kaitav coming and stealing from Brahmaji. So now what did they steal? That time there was no creation. So they stole the subtle awareness from, it was a high-tech robbery. Yeah, so he came and the Lord came and restored that knowledge. So Vedas exist in a subtle form. And that subtle form of the Vedas is non-different from Krishna. And The word Akshara is used to refer to Veda, the word Akshara is also used to refer to the Supreme Lord. So in that sense, Jnana is a manifestation of Krishna. So Jnana is not just something which we acquire with our brain. So now Krishna has talked about all this. Now he will say, earlier he said it's avijnaya, it's not understandable. But how can it be understood? He'll describe the next word. Iti kshetram tatha jnanam jayam choktam samasataha madhaktaye tad vijnaya madbhavayopapadyate.
Does the field of activities, the body, knowledge and the knowable have been summarily described by me? Only my devotees can understand this thoroughly and thus attain to my nature.
So although this is hardcore jnana, what he is saying, who can understand it? Madbhakta etad vijnaya. Only my devotees can understand it. Madbhavayopapadyate. And they will attain love for me. Even if one doesn't say, even if madbhav, even if somebody says, he will attain my nature or my mode of being. So even if say that one will attain Brahman liberation, when somebody wants to interpret like that, Krishna is Brahman, wants to interpret as one. But still, how that is possible? It is only by bhakti. Without bhakti, it is not possible. But Krishna has used the word bhav in several places, and other places it is very clear that he is not referring to an impersonal realization. He is referring to personal. So now Krishna has, actually this verse, because it's a itself a complicated section. Krishna sort of gives periodic breaks. You know, now I explain this to you. So now, what has he explained? Kshetram, tha, jnanam, geyam. So kshetra, jnana, geyam. And kshetra, geyam also he explained right in the beginning only. So now he will start explaining about purusha and prakriti. So prakritim purusham chaiva vidyanadi ubhavapi vikaramsha gunamsha iva vidhi prakriti sambhava.
Material nature and the living entity should be understood to be beginningless. Their transformations and the mode of matter are products of the material nature.
So, prakriti and purusha are anadi. They are beginningless. They are eternal. So now, as I mentioned earlier, all religions talk about God. But the mental conception that comes in people's mind when they talk about God, when some Indian or a Hindu talks about God, he thinks about Krishna, Ram or Vishnu. But a very different conception comes in the mind when Christians or Muslims talk about God. So now their understanding is that they don't think Prakriti to be eternal. They think matter is temporary. Now, so that's why one of the biggest philosophical problems that the Abrahamic religions cannot answer is how does God create something from nothing? How did God create this world from nothing? So, of course, God can do anything. That's a logical, that's one answer. But that's just appealing to transcendental power of God for every small thing. But if we look at the point of the law of conservation of energy, science has found out, conservation of matter, conservation of energy, they can't explain how God created something out of nothing. But our understanding is that God, although God can create something out of nothing, God doesn't have to, because even matter is eternal. So in that sense, the word creation does not mean creation from non-existence to existence. Creation means basically imparting a form to the unmanifest matter. In our understanding, creation doesn't mean something new is, like say, you create this farm. So create this farm doesn't mean that there's nothing existing and we create the farm. The raw materials were there, but they were in a different shape. Or they were in a useless shape or an attractive shape. Now we give a shape like that. So we don't consider that God has created anything from nothing. Our philosophy is that even matter is eternal. So viddhi anadi ubhavapi. Both, ubhava means both. So both are eternal. Matter is, so jiva ishvara kala karma prakriti. Out of which only karma is not eternal. So our understanding of creation is what? Creation simply means the imparting of forms to the Lord. Now, vikaramsha gunamshaiva viddhi prakriti sambhavan. So naturally the question comes here, Krishna is addressing the obvious question. If Prakriti is eternal, Prakriti doesn't seem to be eternal. There's no, what is changing is, actually the forms are changing. And that change happens only in the realm of Prakriti. The change which happens to the forms keep changing, that happens in the realm of Prakriti. And now is one of the most enigmatic verses here, which is also the exact same verse is there in the Bhagavatam also. It's good. Karya karana kartrutve hetu prakriti ruchyate purusha sukha dukkhana bhoktutve hetu ruchyate
nature is said to be the cause of all material causes and effects, whereas the living entity is the cause of the various sufferings and enjoyments in this world.
So, now what exactly does this mean? Karya karana kartrutve hetu prakrutrichyate. So material, material nature is not, because the word cause comes twice, it can be a little confusing. So the first material nature said is the cause of all causes and effects. So instead of cause, we can use the word as a substratum. Substratum is the basis on which all material causes and effects happen. So everything that happens in this world, all the causes and effects are happening. Causes and effects means, you know, somebody throws a glass and a window cracks. Somebody explodes a bomb and a huge building crashes. So the bomb is the cause, falling of the building is the effect. So all these cause and effects are happening on the substratum of Prakriti. Mm-hmm. But now when all these causes and effects are happening on the substratum of Prakriti, then actually the soul is not affected by this. Why is the soul affected? Purusha sukha dukkhanam. He goes to sukha and dukkha. Why? Bhoktrutve hetu ruchyate. Because of the desire to enjoy. So now to understand this, the same example which I had given in the 5th chapter of a television show or a virtual reality is there. So now, if the virtual reality show is going on, Sudhaputra wrote a very interesting article called Simulated Worlds. So in that he says, suppose a person is playing a video game in which he is driving a car. And as he's driving a car, maybe he's a policeman chasing a thief or something like that. He's driving a car at high speed and, you know, he's going left, going right, pedaling. And virtual reality, they also allow you to have interact all the senses. Normally in a movie or a television, only the sound and the sight are involved. But in virtual reality, they involve all the senses. So we'll have gears which we can move. We'll have also ear pads. So if you're moving very fast, the air seems to be whistling in the ears. Even the seat will move when we are moving. So it's a complete illusion, it is, in one sense. So especially in air flights, nowadays they train people like that. You know, because every time you cannot, your pilot is not trained, you cannot enter the whole airplane to see whether he's trained or not. And he will die and he will destroy the airplane also. So therefore they do simulations, flight simulations, to see how trained is. So basically now in simulations, if a person is moving in a car at a very high speed and he comes in a bridge, and as he sees the bridge, suddenly the bridge collapses and there's a big fast flowing river over there. Boom, the car falls, turns around and zoop, is swept away. So now a person who is in a virtual reality, he will meet his virtual death. Now will his virtual death affect him or not?
Affect.
It is not going to affect him in the sense that he is not going to die. But to the extent he is identifying with that, to the extent he is going to be affected. What happened? Like you see, sometimes people when they watch movies, they are so affected by the movies. Why? Because, so now try to take this virtual reality analogy. All that is happening, this car moving here, that bridge falling there, all the causes and effects that are happening are the substratum of that virtual reality of the technology. So, karya karana kartrutve hetu prakriti ruchyate. So everything that is happening in this world, say a tsunami comes, a hurricane comes, some officials become corrupt, whatever. All that is happening in the realm of Prakriti. But when a person, Purusha Sukha Dukkhanam, the Purusha is the soul who experiences Sukha and Dukkha, why? Bhoktrutve Hetu Ruchyate. Because he has a desire to enjoy. So because this person is watching the virtual reality game, so because of that Bhoktrutve desire, he gets Sukha and Dukkha. So like that Krishna is telling here, it's an enigmatic verse, but he's telling, yes, the causes and effects will go on in this world. But So happiness and distress is because of our enjoying mentality. So now when a pure devotee or a very advanced devotee, when he gets some disease, some accident, for him, his disease is not a suffering, it is an inconvenience. What is the difference between suffering and inconvenience? The suffering means, suppose my stomach is upset, it's a suffering for me. But if my car is punctured, that's not a suffering, that's an inconvenience. Now of course if I have to go for a preaching program, my car is being punctured, I have to repair the car. And in that sense I will have to be grateful. But the puncture of the car is not as direct, as personal a problem as the upset of the stomach. So in that sense, the puncture of the car is a inconvenience and a stomach upset is a problem, is a suffering. But now take this analogy backward. You know, the body is like a car. So for a pure devotee, you understand his body is like a car. Even if his body breaks down, it is just like a car puncture. So it's an inconvenience. It's not a suffering. Although externally, the pure devotee may also do what we are expected, what we do. He may also go to a doctor, take a treatment. Because he does that because he wants to use the body to serve him, serve the Lord. But he is not affected in the sense of being in pain or in distress or in anger, in frustration, in depression. No, he's just concerned about serving Krishna. And you know that if I don't take care, I won't be able to serve Krishna. So Prabhupada was like that. Even in the final days, you know, dictating his purport, such clear consciousness. Although he was on the verge of death and physically completely broken down. Now when Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj came to meet Prabhupada, Prabhupada was a shadow of his self. Completely, you know, so emaciated. So Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj was very shocked to see him. And Prabhupada was so unaffected. Prabhupada realized that he is shocked. And just to console him, Prabhupada said, "You are a scientist? The science requires that there should be proof of everything. So throughout my life, I told that you are not the body, you are the soul. Just see now. My body is gone, but I am still there. So I have proven what I said." So that was the Prabhupada. So actually, to the extent we don't identify with the body, that Bhoktrutva is not there, so Sukha Dukha is not there. And this Bhoktrutva, Krishna will elaborate in the next verse, which is the Bija Vakya. Purusha Prakriti Sohi Humte Prakriti Jan Gunan Karanam Guna Sangosya Sadasat Yoni Janmasu. Yes, so good and evil can refer to the happiness and distress we meet in this life, or asad yoni. It can refer to asad yoni, refers to the, goes to the devaloka and enjoys over there. Asad yoni refers to he goes to lower planets and suffers over there. So basically, he meets good and evil because of karanam guna sangosya, a contact with the modes. And how that guna sangha happens, Krishna will talk in the 14th chapter. Now, Krishna in the last verse, in this verse, he has talked about Purusha. This Purusha is the Jivatma. Now he will talk about the other Purusha, that is the Paramatma. Upadrashta Numantacha Bharta Mokta Maheshwara Paramatme Tichapyokto Dehesmin Purusha Para.
Yet in this body there is another, a transcendental enjoyer, who is the Lord, the Supreme Proprietor, who exists as the overseer and servitor, and who is known as the Super Soul.
Now, this verse makes the things very, very clear that there are two souls. It's not just one soul. Because the previous verse talks about Prakriti Stoyi, situated in Prakriti. But here he's talking about Upadrashta, one who is above, Anumanta, Paramita. And if nothing is not clear, still, Paramatmeti Chapyokto. You know, if it is the same soul, there is no need to say that he is called like this. He's called, Krishna, he's called as the Paramatma. And the Paramatma can mean Param Atma in the sense that he is the super soul. It can also mean that Atma who is Param. He is transcendental. So Prabhupada uses both. There is another transcendental enjoyer. Upadrishta Anumantacha Bharta Bhokta Maheshwara. So previous was described as he is entangled in matter. But here you see he is the maintainer, he is the overseer, the protector. This talks, so the second Purusha is talked about over here. So what is the title of this chapter which Prabhupada has given? Nature, the enjoyer and consciousness. This is just important. So what Prabhupada is telling is? So the enjoyer is? Super soul. Consciousness is? Soul. And nature is? Prakriti. So actually how is it?
Nature, enjoyer, consciousness. So nature is? Prakriti and Kshetra. Now, the enjoyer is Purusha, he is the Supreme Purusha. And consciousness is the Purusha, but he is the subordinate Purusha. What is the meaning now?
Jnanandeya.
Purusha, Prakriti, Kshetra, Kshetrajna and Jnanandeya. So, Jnan is what? The enjoyer gives.
The enjoyer gives the jnana to the consciousness, to the soul. And actually jnana is all three. So, this is one chapter that Prabhupada has given his own title. You know, he has not taken the title from any previous acharyas or anyone, because he very concisely wants to convey what is there. The traditional title that is used for this chapter is Purusha Prakriti Vibhaga Yoga. Kshetra Kshetra Vibhaga Yoga or Purusha Prakriti Vibhaga Yoga. Both of them it is called. So it is called traditional. But Prabhupada is very concisely summarizing the contents. Now after introducing the Super Soul, Krishna talks about Prakriti, Purusha Prakriti in only 4 verses. Now he says, now I have told you this knowledge. Yevam, what is it? Yevam Veti Purusham Prakritim Cha Gunai Saha Sarvatha Vartamanopi Samuyopi Jayate.
One who understands
the concerning material living entity and the natural modes of nature, spiritual things, regardless of his present position.
Yeah.
So regardless of his present position, that means he may engage in a battlefield, he may engage in meditation, whatever he is, if he understands his knowledge, then he will not have to take birth again. That means he will not be bound or he will be liberated. Now, Krishna has earlier said that the knowledge of Jnana, Gaya and Kshetraka you can understand through bhakti. But how can this be understood? Yenam Vettihar Purusham. So Vetti, how can that be known? So Krishna describes the next 2 verses. What are the ways in which this can be known?
Dhyane Natmani Pashyanti Kechidatmanam Atmana Anyena Sankhena Yogena Jnana Yogena Chapare.
Converting the Super Soul within themselves to meditation, others to the cultivation of knowledge, and still others to working without
physical desire. So, we have 3 paths over here. Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga. 3 ways. Now, of course, Samacharya says that Krishna is describing, because he is using the word Kechit. There he says, actually it's a progression. From Karma Yoga to Jnana Yoga to Ashtanga Yoga, what Krishna talked about earlier. Now, Krishna says that, yes, this is one way, but here also, in this chapter of Jnana, he will describe the alternative. So, this is the staircase Krishna described over here. Immediately, he will describe the elevator, the bhakti.
Anye tvaiva majanantaha shutva anye bhyopasate te picha chattaranteva vrityum shuti parayanaha.
Again, there are those who, although not conversant in spiritual knowledge, begin to worship the Supreme Person upon hearing about him from others. Because of their tendency to hear from authorities, they also transcend the path of birth and death.
Yes, Shuti Parayana, devotees of hearing. Narayan Parayana is devotee of Lord Narayan, Shuti Parayana, devotees of hearing. So here he is talking, hearing is clearly a limb of bhakti. Now, Jnana does not involve so much hearing. Jnana involves more self-speculation and contemplation and analysis. And yoga involves more practice of sadhana and inner contemplation. So this hearing is primarily a component of bhakti. Krishna is talking about bhakti. And he's saying, at what level they may be? Ajanantaha. Even if they don't know anything, just hear, by that, they'll come to the same level. Krishna, previous verse said, nasa bhuyo vijayate. Te pichati taranteva mrityum. They'll go beyond mrityum. That means the same result he's describing over here. This too? Yeah, so Krishna is telling that, that's what I was saying, that the emphasis here is that even if they don't have any of the other qualifications, still by hearing they can get to the highest level. So earlier I saw how bhakti can take people from the lowest to the highest level. So Krishna is saying, anye, even if they don't have any qualification for karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, still they can also be elevated just by hearing. That is the idea. Yeah. If you see the hippies, they had no spiritual knowledge also. But just by hearing, they got all knowledge. The point here is that even if one has no knowledge, whether material or spiritual, but by hearing one will get everything. So, Prabhupada writes in the second canto that, you know, the, I mean, just as the perfectional thinking results from sufficient quantity of hearing. Perfectional thinking is thinking of the Lord, and thinking of the Lord will result from sufficient quantity of hearing about the Lord. So hearing can elevate a person even from the lowest level. Now, Krishna has answered all the questions. But now what Krishna will do is, he will fit it all together into one coherent view. Okay, how does this person who has jnana, how does he see the world? How does he see the interactions, the activities, the happenings in this world? And how his vision can enable him to become liberated? Yavat sanjayate kinchit tatvam sthavara jangama kshetra kshetrajna sanyoga tadviddhi bharatarshabha. Yes. So they understand that ultimately, yes, a person may be going to the moon, a person may be going to the mountain, going under ocean, whatever he is doing. So ultimately, nature and consciousness are interacting. Kshetra kshetrajna sanyoga. So, you know, knowledge ultimately means to see beyond all the variety to the essence. What is the essence? Somebody like, there may be so many wars and murders and violence happening, but what is the purity? This is actually a result of the modes of passion ignorance. It's not that we have to go and try to do negotiations to find a solution to every war, every conflict. Now what do we have to do? We have to actually promote the mode of goodness. Now when the Indochina war was going on, at that time Prabhupada was writing his Bhagavatam first canto purport. So you're saying that because the glorification of the Lord has been stopped, so people have become fight. Now somebody, what is the correlation, you know? China has some political problem with India, that's why China is attacking. That is only a superficial cause. The real cause is all conflicts result because of the lower modes. So when we see the universal principles, the fights result not just because of some specific issues. They result because the people are in lower modes. So when people come to higher modes, the fights will go away. So, kshetra kshetra kya sanyoga. One sees. So basically there is nothing but the contact of the modes which is there. Yeah, because one party was in tamaguna. Or one party was in rajaguna. Yeah, so you know, Hiranyakashipu was in Rastitaguna, demons were Satyoga, they were also in, they were not in goodness. So if one party is in passion or goodness, other, now, see, Arjuna is more or less a Kshatriya, but he's trying to live a goodness life. Krishna said, he cannot live in goodness, you have to come to passion. So you have to fight the war. But you have to fight in the proper consciousness. So I don't mean to say that, you know, all conflicts will disappear when we come to goodness. But there will be a lasting solution that will come in goodness. If both parties are in passion, the conflict will be endless. So, in general, we learn to see the basic principles that are operating beyond the details of what we see. Okay, so now, Krishna will say, okay, so first he sees Kshetra and Kshetrajna. But now, so he is seeing Ishwa, Jiva and Prakriti. Now, the next verse will describe how he sees the Ishwara, Super Soul. Samam Sarveshu Bhuteshu Tishthantam Parameshwaram Vinashyatsva Vinashyantam Ya Pashyati Sa Pashyati.
One of these, the super soul accompanying the individual soul in all the bodies, and to understand that neither the soul nor super soul being the respectable body never destroyed, actually
sees. Samam Sarveshu, Samam, he says equally. Samam Sarveshu Bhutish, in all living beings, Tishthantam Parameshwaram. Now Parameshwaram, the normal rendition of this will be the super soul. Somebody can say that Jiva is also Ishvara. It's a minor controller. In the 15th chapter, the Jiva is also called as a controller, in one, Ishvara in one place. But even if one says that, the point is, in this verse is Vinashyatva Avinashyantam. The body is perishable, but he is imperishable. So Prabhupada, actually first he says, super soul with respect to Parameshwar, but second time Vinashyatva Avinashyantam. In Avinashyantam, he includes both soul and super soul. Both of them are imperishable. And Yaha Pashyati Sa Pashyati, such a person is a true seer. And next verse will describe what is the benefit of this true seeing. Samam Pashyan Hi Sarvatra Samavasthitam Hi Ishwaram Nahi Nasyatman Atmanam Tato Yati Param Gatim.
Thus he approaches the transcendental nature.
Interesting now. Well, in the 6th chapter it was said, in the 7th verse, Jitātmanah Prashantasya, Paramātmā Samāhita. When one conquers the mind, then one reaches the super soul. Here it is said, if one sees the super soul, one will not be degraded by the mind. If one sees the super soul, one will not be degraded by the mind. So which is the beginning? Actually, it is not that this is the cause and that is the result. Wherever we can, we should begin. So it's like, you know, we say that when we get the higher taste, then we can give the lower taste. But when we say that, you know, as long as we don't give the lower taste, we will not get the higher taste. So where do we start? We start by hearing. By hearing, we understand, actually this is higher taste, this is lower taste. So let me give the lower and let me strive for the higher. So similarly, which comes first? Does seeing the super soul come first or does controlling the mind come first? No, hearing comes first. And by hearing we try to do both. We try to perceive intellectually, super soul is present in everyone's heart, and we also try to control the mind. So actually, now here is what Krishna is describing, that like Parikshit Maharaj. Now when he was cursed, what happened to him? He could have counter-cursed, like the counter-cursing that happened in the Daksha Yajna. And he would have been more justified over there. Because, you know, what he did was a very small mistake. But he didn't do that. What did he see? Supreme Lord has come to me in the form of this Brahman's curse to deliver me from material existence. So because he could see the Supreme Lord in control, nahinasti atmanatmanam. He was not degraded. So that means that whatever happens in this world, if you understand Krishna is in control, and then we respond, then we will never be degraded. So, of course, how we respond, that will depend on time, place, circumstance. One time Srila Prabhupada was giving a lecture, and suddenly in between, some person started blasting Prabhupada in the middle of the lecture. So we calmly sat and heard. And then, after he spoke, there's finally, the devotees are just waiting for a signal from Prabhupada, they just pushed him out. But Prabhupada did not do anything. And then, he just finally he walked out now, rage. And Prabhupada continued his lecture. And the devotees asked him, Prabhupada, why did you do that? So Prabhupada replied, I don't know. Krishna allowed it, so I must accept it. So Prabhupada is revealing to us, you know, it's not that everything that happens we will find a cause for it. I don't know. But Krishna has allowed it, so I must accept it. Sometimes we may go for a preaching program, and somehow something happens, the car gets punctured, or we miss the train, or the train gets this, that. I think I'm going for Krishna's service. But it's not happening. So why did it happen? No, we are not the super soul. I don't know. Krishna allowed it, so I must accept it. So of course, now Krishna may want us to do the service, but Krishna may also want us to learn tolerance and patience. That's another purpose. So Prabhupada was demonstrating to us. So nahinasti atmanatmanam. Now, next verse he'll describe what is this samam pashyati. So he's described the fruit. The fruit is that? The first fruit he will describe is, of this Gyan Chakshu, he is describing this verse, Nahinasti. And the final fruit is, not only will not be degraded, but he will liberate it. That will describe in the concluding verse of this chapter. So now he describes how he is able to see the Sama, because there is so much diversity in this world. How is he able to see the unity? Yada Prakritim Purusha, sorry, Prakriti Kurbani Kriyamanani Sarvashaha Yaha Pashyati Thatmanam Akartaram Sa Pashyati.
One who can see that all activities are performed by the body, which is created of material nature, and sees that the self does nothing actually see.
So this verse is the exact opposite of Prakriti Kriyamanani Gunai Karmani Sarvasha. Where there the soul is removed Atma, here he sees that actually only material nature is doing everything. Kriyamanani Sarvasha. So he says, okay, whatever, if a person is speaking in a rude way to me, actually the soul is pure. The body is made of three modes and the person is controlled by three modes and is speaking in a crazy way. Actually, prakriti vich kriyamanam. Everything is happening by material nature only. So, tathatmanam akartaram sa pashyati. And then, I may say that, but okay, the atma is not the karta, prakriti is the karta. But then the prakriti is acting in so many diverse ways. Then he will describe how he sees the diversity behind the unity. Yada bhuta prathak bhavam. Pashyati tada eva cha vittaram brahma sampadyate tada. Quickly.
When a sensible man ceases to see different identities due to different material bodies and he sees how beings are expanded everywhere, he attains to the Brahman conception.
So he sees that the variety is simply caused by matter. Actually, the spirit is the same everywhere. The variety is a result of matter. So he is not affected. And next verse will describe further how he sees the unity. Anadityan nirgunatvan paramatmayam avyaya sharirasto pi kaunteya na karoti na lipyate. So na karoti na lipyate. He is neither. So now this verse is talking more about the soul, not about the super soul. Who is the atma? Anadityan nirgunatvan. Of course, the soul, it can apply to the soul also, because the soul also is not bound. Super soul also is not bound. He doesn't do anything. He is not bound. So it can apply to both. But the person is able to see how I can stay unbound. So na karoti na lipyate is the seed. He doesn't do anything. He is not bound. He is not mixed. So na karoti will be illustrated in the next verse. And na lipyate will be illustrated in the verse after that. Yatha prakashayatyeka katam saukshmyat akasham nopalipyate sarvatra vasito dehe tathatma nopalipyate. So actually, first Krishna describes lipyati. How the soul is not mixed? He says, give the example. Or they say the sky is all pervading. So here, what is Prabhupada using the word? Translating it as yatha akasham. Akasham is translating as sky or ether? Sky. So for our conceptual understanding, the sky is everywhere, but the sky is not affected by the dirt, by the stench, by the bad smells or anything. It's transcendental. So na lipyate. But then somebody may say, actually the sky doesn't do anything. The sky, you know, the sky is not causing this thing to change in any way. It is existing. But the soul is causing changes. Now I am speaking. The soul is causing changes to happen in this world. So how can he cause changes and not be bound? That he illustrates with another verse. Another example of sun. Yatha prakashayateka krishnam lokam imam ravi kshetram kshetri yatha krishnam prakashayati bharata.
As the sun above illuminates all this universe, so does the radiant field one within the body illuminate the entire body of consciousness.
Yes. So, the sun is far away from the earth and the sun just sends its rays to the earth. And the rays cause the activity to happen in the earth, but the sun is not attached. And the sun is not affected. Because the sun is not attached, the sun is not affected. So like that, the soul is distant and separate from the body. The soul's rays are radiated in the form of consciousness, and the consciousness creates effects in the body. But one who can see himself different from the body like that, the person is not affected. And then, Krishna says, after describing, na karoti na lipyate, next verse will describe, not only will not bound, not entangled, he will be liberated.
Trakshetragyayorevam antaram jnana chakshushaha yah pashyat imoksham cha ekalu gunanti te param.
Those who see with eyes of knowledge the difference between the body and the lower of the world, and can also understand the process of liberation from one age to material nature, attain to the supreme world.
Yeah. So, they understand first the nature of the world, and then understand the process to be liberated from the world. So, sambandha jnana nabhideya. Krishna will elaborate this more in 15th chapter. Te vidur yanti te param. They will attain the supreme destination. So we have completed successfully the toughest chapter of the Bhagavad Gita today. This is one of the most analytical and technical chapter in one sense. So I'll summarize what we discussed. We discussed about jnana, in which we discussed elaborately about how birth, old age disease and death are the primary problems. Then we discussed about how jnana is not just information but transformation. And then we went to the section of Gaya, where we focused on the understanding of how the super soul is personal and transcendental. How God, there is a personal manifestation of the absolute truth, which can be considered super soul or Bhagavan in those verses. And then we discussed how right in the Jnana section, Krishna glorifies Bhakti twice. Once in the 19th verse, that all this can be understood only by Bhakta. And again, he says again in 26th verse, that actually even if one is ajananta, one can be elevated right by hearing, which is limbo bhakti. And then he describes, one understands this vision of Jnana Chakshu. First thing, one will not be bound. Second thing, one will be liberated. So now in the next chapter, without asking, without Arjuna prompting any questions, Krishna understands that I have talked about a lot of conceptual things. So Arjuna already has a thing, how will the soul get bound? How will he get liberated? So to answer that, Krishna will talk about the agency that causes bondage and that will bring liberation. That is three modes of material nature. So he is elaborating on Bhungte Prakriti Jan Gunan. So Prakriti Jan Gunan. The three modes one of material nature that will be elaborated in the next chapter, which we will hopefully complete tomorrow. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki Jai.
Jai. Hari Hari Bol.